Blog Talk Radio.
להודיע לבני האדם גבורותיו וכבוד הדר מלכותו.
מלכותך, מלכות כל עולמים, וממשלתך בכל דור ודור. סומך אדוני לכל המופלים, וזוקף לכל הכפופים. ואתה נותן להם את אוכלם ביתם. פותח את ידיך ומסביר לכל חי רצון.
צדיק אדוני בכל דרכיו, וחסיד בכל מעשיו. קרוב אדוני לכל קוראיו, לכל אשר יקראוהו באמת.
רצון יראיו יעשה, ושבתם ישמע ויושיעם. שומר אדוני את כל אהבת, את כל הרשעים ישמיד.
והילת אדוני ידבר בי ויברך כל בשר שם קודשו לעולם ועד ואנחנו נברך יא מעתה ועד עולם הללויה הללויה אשרי יושבי
Boker Tov and Shalom, and welcome to the Wisdom of Torah, sponsored by Blog Talk Radio. And I am your hostess, Sister Eliana Batya, and today is Monday, April 23rd, 2012. And I want to apologize. I wanted to do the show at 8 o'clock, and I couldn't do it at 8, and I tried to reschedule for 10, and I couldn't do it at 10, and then I had to get some assistance so I could schedule it for 11 o'clock. So if you listen to this, if you normally listen to us at 8, and then you're coming back and you're hearing the archive today, it's because I was technologically challenged at getting the show rescheduled to a later date. A later time today. So, but I'm on the air now, and if you call in or if you can call in, if you are tuning in after I've promoted it out, and if you can join us, that's great. We love to have you joining us in the chat room. But I'm going to go ahead, and today I'm going to finish Psalm 7, and I just want to say thank you so much, and I want to welcome everyone and say shalom. The song, I want to explain the song that plays. This song, Ashrei, is a song of praise. It means happy, and it's talking about the different characteristics and qualities of the Most High. Sadiq, it says Sadiq Adonai, and then it goes into a description. And Sadiq, which means righteous, Shomer, it talks about holiness. So there's different, this song is actually talking about the different characteristics of the Most High, and it's all in Hebrew. So I hope you're enjoying the music and the content. And also I would recommend that Hebrew people returning to the understanding of who we are, take a Hebrew class. They have a wonderful Hebrew online. It's done by Israeli teachers right out of Israel, and it's excellent. I've taken the course before some time ago. I'm actually going to be taking a refresher course. Many years ago, I took a biblical Hebrew, and there's a difference between biblical Hebrew and conversational Hebrew, everyday conversational Hebrew. So it's a wonderful course. I'm actually going to be taking the combined academic courses coming up very shortly here, just to enhance my understanding, because like I said before in on my Shabbat broadcast and in other broadcasts, when I first came to the understanding of being a Hebrew, I went into a synagogue, and they were reading the Siddurs, and they're all in Hebrew. And they have the what's called a transliteration, which is the way the Hebrew is written in English letters or an English understanding, so you can actually read it, but the understanding still has to be there. And I started taking a biblical Hebrew course, and but I was kind of intimidated because it was a whole new world, a whole new understanding for me. And I told you I was at this Russian Orthodox shul, and it was a wonderful place. However, there weren't very many people that looked like me, but I found out since we lived in the Bay Area, there were a lot of black people, African people, descendants of the continent of Africa, and Hebrews, which we are, and we've been given so many labels. It's so hard to keep up with, you know, politically correctly of who we are according to the world standards. They call us everything, but we are the descendants of Jacob, and so we've been called African-American, we've been called black, we've been called all just many names, derogatory, and some that they feel politically correct, positive words that they feel that they're calling us. But suffice to say, being in that Russian Orthodox shul, I didn't see a lot of people of color. So, but becoming a part of the B'chol Lashon and being just around the Bay Area and getting out more and attending events at different synagogues and participating in different things like Israel in the Park and different community events, I began to note that there were quite a large number of people of color attending shuls, but they were spread out. There was not a real location, and that's why I mentioned on Shabbat that the B'chol Lashon organization was a great place because they were completely focused on Jews of color, and they were seeking them out not just in the Bay Area, but around the world and around the United States, across the United States. So there's quite a large, like I said before, thousands and thousands of Hebrew people that are in synagogues from Orthodoxy all the way to conservative and liberal synagogues. I mean, we are all over the place. And in some places, we're becoming more numerous. Some places there may be a sprinkling, but I know of Hebrew people that are in, you know, all across the United States, Midwest, down south, New York, Chicago, Eastern Seaboard, down in Florida, all across the United States that are and have been for the last, I would say, 10 years or more, a part of a synagogue and have synagogue life and knowledge. So the Most High is doing something around his people. But then I've, like I said, in my studies, I've come to understand the real essence of who I am and the truth that we're Hebrew people. And the only place we're going to, as a Hebrew person, we're going to get the knowledge of the Torah and understand the Torah or understand the precepts and concepts of Torah and Torah living is really sometimes in the synagogue. Now the Most High, and it's not just now, so I want to correct myself, but the Most High has risen up many Hebrew congregations and many Hebrew teachers. And so there's an opportunity for a Hebrew person to be able to connect directly with a Hebrew congregation and a Hebrew teacher and start understanding Torah from the Hebraic mindset, not necessarily the Jewish mindset, but the Hebraic mindset, which is very different. I mentioned some things on my Shabbat show, and I'm getting tons and tons of listeners via archive. It's the largest number that I've ever seen in my blogs, and I believe it's because I touched on an issue about same-sex couples. And I don't think it's just because I touched on the issue of same-sex couples. I think it's because I voiced my opinion about it concerning the organization that we were connected with, and my opinion is based in the Torah. Individually, I don't hate individual people, but I abhor certain lifestyles. And that doesn't, I don't think that I'm better. I think we all have to strive if we want to see the Most High. Now, if you don't want to see the Most High, then that's completely up to you. If you don't want to see the Most High in peace, if you don't want to be a part of his kingdom, that's completely your prerogative. But for me and for my family, knowing what the Torah states and being a person, a Hebrew person, living outside of my native land, which would be Eretz Yisrael, had our people been obedient, we've already been through a fire, been through the storm, and we were scattered because our ancestors were not living right. So you haven't, see, this is again another point of understanding that the European, Eastern European Jewish person is a convert. They have not had, they do not have the same requirements placed on them as the Hebrew. Because about 2, maybe 3 years ago, in Israel and around the world, there was a wholehearted acceptance of the same-sex couples and, you know, Jewish couples as being part of the community. Now, they're part of the Jewish community. If they're Jewish, if they are, you know, practicing Judaism or born, you know, into the Jewish way of life and raised in it, of course, but in their lifestyle. But I believe that there may have been a situation that existed where they weren't accepted or felt comfortable coming in maybe Orthodox and conservative shuls, but maybe more of your more liberal shuls. And so I think what happened was this was coming up quite a bit, and so all of the rabbis from Israel to, you know, all over the world made a declared statement, and I'll find that for you on another program, and I'll read it up. But anyway, it was common. I take the there's a publication on the West Coast called the J, and it's the Jewish Weekly, and it you know, we take the J, we get it, we've been getting it for 10 years. So, you know, anything in the Jewish world that's coming down the pike, West Coast-wise, and information from Israel and from New York or anything, we get. But it's kind of a liberal-based paper, so it gives more of a liberal side, and it talks a lot about the homosexual agenda and what's going on with Jews. So when I'm talking, if anyone is listening and they are Jewish and they're thinking, well, you don't know what you're talking about, trust me, I know what I'm talking about. I have firsthand knowledge, and I have friends, and I have a lot of connections. And again, I sit on the board of directors, like I said before, of the oldest hospital in Israel, the Shaar Zedek Medical Center in Jerusalem. So from what I'm speaking, I know this. So, but I have a personal opinion and a personal life, and I don't subscribe to things that are really outside of Torah. And since I have been learning more about being Hebrew and understanding the requirements, the strict requirements that the Most High has for his people, that's the path that I have chosen. That is the path that I want to be on, and I don't need it. I'm not seeking a popularity contest. I don't need an approval from anybody on the planet. I only need the approval of the Most High, and that's what I'm seeking. So, you know, I'm not trying to offend. I'm not even trying to be rude. I'm just trying to be real. And I'm going to keep it real because that's the only place that I can keep it. I know there's a big push in the earth to just, you know, everybody hold hands and sing Kumbaya. What you do is your business. What I do is mine. Let's not talk about it. We're all children of the Most High. Well, no, not quite. The Most High has standards. I mean, yes, we all live on the earth, and the Most High created the earth. But he has standards, and we're not all children of the Most High. We are not all children of the Most High, but we can all come, and we can all become a part of the kingdom of the Most High and be accepted if we do well. And doing well means we have to live according to the standards that he has set, because he's only going to allow people who are walking according to his commandments into his kingdom. That's just the bottom line, you know, and it's not, I didn't make it up. I'm not even old enough to have been ancient of days and old enough to have written all of this stuff. My little short span of years is going to pass away like a breath in the night, but the Most High abides forever, and none of us can change him by our lifestyle, and there is nothing new under the sun. So this movement and the protesting and all the stuff that people are seeking their rights, this was done before. The scripture tells us that as it was in the days of Noah, so shall it be in these days at the end times when Yahushua, the Son of the Most High, will return to the earth. There's nothing new under the sun. All of this stuff is nothing new. People becoming, you know, same sex or changing your sexual, you know, your genitalia through surgery, that's nothing new. I'm sorry to disappoint you. It's nothing new. All of this has been before. There's nothing new. So we're not, you know, we're called to a standard of holiness. We're called to a standard of righteousness. And that's the standard that I uphold. That's the standard that is for me. It's tough to walk that way with the Most High, but I choose to do it. That means I choose to go through whatever level of suffering and sorrow and whatever level of correction and punishment that I need to endure in order to get in line with what the Most High has said and decreed, because it's just a temporary adjustment for me to bring my whole self, my whole being, my whole mind, my thoughts, in line with Torah and what Torah teaches and how to walk in Torah. And I don't want a deviation. I don't want someone to distort Torah for me and make me feel good if I'm wrong. Because at the end of the day, when I perish, when my life ebb is floating away from this house that it lives in, this body, and I'm standing in the presence of the Most High, none of you are going to be there to be my advocate. Nobody's going to stand there with me and say, oh, Most High, you know, you knew Eliana's heart. No, Eliana has to stand before the Most High for Eliana. I have to answer to the Most High for myself. Nobody can do that for me. So I don't need your opinion of approval. I don't need you to affirm me and tell me, oh, it's okay, Eliana. No, you can't do that because you're not going to stand there with me when I'm standing before the King. And I'm not going to stand there for you either. So you have to make sure, and I have to make sure, that when I stand before him and Torah is open and the books of my life and my deeds are open and read before the Most High, that he sees that I did teshuva, I made a change when I was going wrong and I began to walk according to Torah principles, and he can see that I repented of my deeds, and he can see that my actions changed and I started walking according to Torah and understanding and wisdom, and I started disciplining my body and myself and my mind. When he sees that, and that outweighs all of the evil, then he says, you're accepted into the kingdom. Nobody's going to do that for me. I've got to do it for myself. Each one of us has to do it for ourselves. So I'm saying all that to say, we do have a movement today, and there's this great push to accept things that Torah says are not right. And one of those great things is this whole identity in this lifestyle of sexual preference and same-sex relationships. And this is something that Torah says should not be. I'm going to stick with Torah. I know that there's churches, and I know there's synagogues that aren't touching it, but I know for sure there are churches that are taking the Torah and they're mistranslating the scripture. They're taking the story, for example, of Naomi and Ruth, and they're trying to say that there was a lesbian relationship between these two women. And they're taking the story of Jonathan and David, and they're trying to say there was a homosexual relationship between these two men. And they're taking other such stories out of context of Scripture to try to fit an agenda that they have. And they're taking the story with Yahushua and his disciple, John, or his Talmud, and when he said he put his head on his bosom or his breast, they're trying to make that a homosexual story. And, you know, if you really don't know Torah and you're in that lifestyle, you want to feel affirmed. You want to feel good about what you're doing. Nobody wants to walk around feeling condemnation. I don't. But I'm wise enough to understand, and I've lived long enough to know, if I'm doing wrong, I'm just doing wrong. And I need, if I want to do business correctly with the Most High, he has a standard. Now, if I don't care about the Most High, if I'm only thinking about today, about what I want today and how it affects me today, then you know what? I'm not going to obey Torah, and I'm going to do whatever I want. I'm going to let my flesh control and dictate how and what I do, when I do it. I'm going to have the most fun that my flesh can ever have. I'm going to indulge myself in everything that makes me feel good if I don't want to have a relationship with the Most High at the end of the day. Yeah, then I'll do all the things that, you know, the world says is fun. I'll take all the drugs. I'll drink all the alcohol. I will live the debauchery, the lifestyle of debauchery. I'll do all the sexual, you know, pleasures that everybody says are good. If I don't want to have a relationship with the Most High, then what does it matter? I know he's not going to accept me in his kingdom, and I know he's going to destroy me at the end of the day. But while I live, I will do all these things if I do not desire a relationship with him. So if you don't desire, then this message is not for you. You don't even have to take an offense. If you have no intention of being a part of the kingdom of the Most High, then this message is not for you. Do what you want. Do what you please. Do what you feel. Keeping on. Do all that's in your heart and in your flesh. But also know this, that at the end of the day, at the end of your life, you're going to have to pay for it. So if you can pay it, I mean, if you have the resources to pay it and do your thing. Have your, live your life, do your thing. But if you want to do business with the Most High and you want to have the favor of the Most High, you want to have your sins forgiven, if you want to do teshuva, if you want to repent, if you want to acknowledge that the way that the Most High has commanded His people to live is right and holy, and it produces a lifestyle of blessing and of peace, then you're going to have to change your ways. You're going to have to change your ways. That's just the bottom line. That's just the bottom line. There's nothing new under the sun. You're not doing anything that hasn't already been done. Everything that has happened on the earth before is happening again. There is nothing new. There's nothing new. So I wanted to say that because I know I'm still, just as putting this show together, I was going in trying to get the time changed, and I kept going into the account, and people are still listening to this. This Erev Shabbat that I just did, they're still listening. I mean, I literally saw the numbers change, and I said, it's amazing. But I know it's because of that conversation that I had about same-sex couples. The other thing that's happening, and this is very, very true, I don't know how many people know it, but I mentioned it on Erev Shabbat, many, many same-sex couples are adopting Hebrew children. Now, when the earthquake in Haiti happened, it's not just homosexual couples that are doing this. It's Europeans all around the world, because as soon as the earthquake happened, people were flocking to get those children out of Haiti. They were taking those Hebrew children and placing them in homes where these people had paid for these children. I don't know what they want with our children. But there are so many Hebrew children growing up right now that have been adopted, little children that have been adopted by European families. I watched I can't think of the program. Oh, it's The Nanny. It's The Nanny program, the one where the parents are having problems with their children and someone comes in to straighten out their home. And there was a episode I watched some time ago where this woman, her husband is in Iraq right now, and they're European. She's blonde, and she has four children that are all Hebrews. And she was trying to set their bedtime schedules, and they're little children too. I don't believe the oldest one was even five, and she had four children, two boys and a girl, and she wanted help to get these children. Children are children. If you don't know how to set the standard to get them to go to bed at night when you say, they're going to keep you up. That's a normal mother thing. I'm not knocking her for raising the children, but I'm just saying there's a phenomenon going on, because while our young people, our young males at 16 and 14, 15, 16 from the inner city are being shot, Hebrews are being adopted by European families and living, growing up in affluent neighborhoods. I don't understand what the Edomites are doing. On the one hand, they're adopting all of our babies that are available, and on the other hand, others of them are killing our young men before they can reach maturity. What's going on? There's some crazy business here right now. I don't understand it. But let me get back to my little story about the mother. She needed help to get her children to bed and to make them stay, because what they were doing, just like all kids, my grandkids do it, they used to do it, but they would get in, she put them to bed, and then they'd get up, and they'd go get in the bed with her. Of course, everybody wants to sleep with mom. So, but she was trying to set the pattern, establish the pattern, that you have to sleep in your own room, and the girls had bunk beds, and the boys had bunk beds. And so the nanny came in and taught her how to put a little nightlight on, put a little music, spend some time with them, read a book, but when it's time for them to go to bed, lights out, you must stay in bed. And if they get up and come in your room, take them back to their room. So long story short, she did. She finally got it together, figured it out, and got her little girls to stay in their room and her little boys to stay in their room. But what I noticed, they had another little scene in there where there's, you know, the father was calling from Iraq, and all the children were sitting there, and the mother was, oh, daddy's calling. And clearly that you have two European parents and all of these, you know, four black children, and they're calling him daddy because that's the only dad they know. And I'm not knocking that because they're children, you know. But the point I'm making is, how strange, and these children were from another country, how strange is it that the Europeans in the United States will adopt our Hebrew children from other countries and despise the Hebrew children that they see in their own neighborhoods? They will make comments the neighborhood is going down, but you will take a Hebrew child from Africa, Zimbabwe, the Cameroon, Senegal, Kenya, Haiti, and have more respect for them than the Hebrews that are in America. The children, they will give no regard to. And I don't understand it. I really don't understand that. But I'm seeing this. So, and getting back to my Bacola Sean story, what we saw in the Bay Area, there's a lot of homosexuality in the Bay Area. Of course, the San Francisco, it spread out from San Francisco, which was kind of localized years ago. And then there was an agenda that said they needed to move into the more of family bedroom communities where it's, you know, mainstream society, families, two-parent households with children going to school. This was their agenda in their community, the homosexual community, to move out among the regular families and to be part of the community and to adopt children and to raise them. Because what they want to do is raise the awareness that they are present and raise the awareness and have everybody believe that there's really nothing wrong with two people of the same gender living together and raising a family if they love each other and they're committed to each other. So what they're, and so that's what they're doing. And they've been doing it for a number of years, and they've been moving, spreading out more into the East Bay. They were in the South Bay. They started moving into the East Bay, and then, of course, then they want to seek out, when they have little children, preschool age, they want to seek out all kinds of activities and organizations to get those children involved with other children. But what it's doing is it's also letting people see, you know, Jane has two mommies or Bill has two daddies. And they've also started creating curriculum around this. And it's in the preschools now. It's in the elementary schools. And they're also teaching the children that it's okay. And what it is doing is undermining society in a very subtle way. Now, some of you maybe listen and say, well, I've got friends, I've got families, and they do a great job. They're better parents than the birth mother and father. That might be true. Individual people may have good skills with children, but their lifestyle that they're living is an abomination before the Most High. The individual person may have very good people skills and skills with young children. That may be one of the gifts and talents, because the Scripture tells us that the gifts that the Most High gives us and the talents that the Most High gives us, they come without repentance. In other words, when you're born, the Most High equips each person differently with a certain number of gifts. These are not gifts that you receive after you come into His kingdom or you do teshuva and you turn your life around. These are natural born gifts. And anyone can have any number of natural born gifts. But what I'm talking about is lifestyle and culture that leads to righteousness before the Most High. Because Sodom and Gomorrah was a city. These were two cities on the plain. And their lifestyle, we know the story about Sodom and Gomorrah, but if you don't, just a little overview. In Sodom and Gomorrah, these were two different cities, but they were they were more prominent cities. And they both had a practice of sexual freedom. There was a lot of homosexuality in Sodom and in Gomorrah. But what made them the more wicked was not so much of their sexual freedom and their practices, which was already an abomination, but the Most High was allowing them to exist for a time. But what made them so cruel was the fact that they also treated the stranger cruelly. They treated the stranger cruelly. They allowed people to die. They allowed people to come into their city gates and would not allow them to find lodging or housing or food. And they watched people starve. And then they prevented and forbade the citizens of Sodom and Gomorrah from helping. And if a person did help a stranger, they killed them. This was the abomination. People were afraid to go past the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah, or if they were traveling a long ways and they knew they were going to come up on the cities of Sodom or Gomorrah and they had to spend the night, people were afraid. Because not only that, people could get raped in the streets. I mean, it was just a lot of perversion. But they also did not have hospitality. And it was an abomination. Their deeds made them also very cruel. Now, the Most High wants us to be, in every way, a people that reflect His righteousness. So, this is what we see happening today. There's a lot of people that are in these relationships, and there's a lot more. And you're going to see an increase of more and more homosexual couples coming up because about 15 years ago, I would say, maybe 15 years ago, they began to introduce that lifestyle into the high schools. If your children went to public high school, if you have children, 15 years ago or, 16 years ago, in the public schools, they began to bring in people from the gay community, and they began to teach the nation's children not only that it was okay for homosexuality. If your children went to Catholic school, Catholics were also teaching it was okay to explore different kinds of relationships, not just between the races, but same sex. And the public school had more liberty because they were taking children off campus in the middle of the day without parents' consent, and they were not only teaching them that it was okay, but they were teaching them how to actually perform certain sexual acts, and they were telling the children that it was a matter of trusting your partner, and your partner could be your best friend. And so my children were in high school around that time, or coming through school, and actually they weren't quite in high school, they were in elementary school. I was homeschooling, but they did have a stint of a little bit of public high school at the end. Maybe 10 years ago. But what I'm saying is that this curriculum had already gone into the school system, and kids were coming out already having experienced a homosexual act in school or, around school or outside of school at a time when they shouldn't even be thinking about sex in the first place. But this is the agenda. So today is even more. I mean, I see it today even more. And you're going to see it. You're going to see more young people and at younger ages because they want to bring this curriculum all the way to preschool. They want children to know about homosexual acts and activities at the age of 3. They don't even need to know about sex at the age of 3. But there's a second agenda with that, and that is the organization of where men are trying to get Congress to approve that men, adult males, can have sexual relationships with young boys as early as the age of 2 years old. And that's another organization. It's called NAMBLA. I believe it's called the National Association of Man, Boy, Love. This is ridiculous. This is so perverse. This is the kind of stuff that was going on in Sodom. It's just very, very perverse. Very, very perverse. And so with all of that, I've heard it said that since the states are starting to approve homosexual marriage between two people of the same sex, then the Mormons are saying, hey, well, then you need to get off of our back with our multiple wives, but a lot of these men in these groups are marrying girls as early as 12 years old. And she may be the ninth or tenth wife of this man, and he may be old enough to be her grandfather. He may be 70 years old. Now, you know, we've got a lot of wickedness going on. This has been happening. Then there's another organization I found out about of women who are having relationships with animals. I mean, this is all going on in Babylon, where we live today, and Egypt, where we live today. These are the things that are bringing the nation down. It's the immorality, and all of this stuff is centered around sex. All of it is centered around sex. The Mormon group with marrying these little children, old men feeling they have the right to have sex with these young girls, two people of the same sex feeling that they have the right to, you know, explore each other's body. Old men wanting only little boys. This is all of these are the perversions of what was going on in Sodom. As Hebrew people and people of righteousness, we can't allow it. You know, we can teach our children while they're young, and we can try to protect them when they're teenagers, and we can talk to them. But we cannot allow it. If we're going to follow the Most High, we cannot allow it. We can't participate. We can't co-sign for it. We can't wink at it. We can't turn the other cheek. We can't pretend like it doesn't exist. And that's the reason why we left that organization, because we can't wink at that kind of thing. They're influencing hundreds of children. Hundreds of children will grow up thinking it's okay. And, of course, they will err. And they, because of their error, they will miss the Most High, and they'll bring danger upon themselves with the Most High. I am going to go into Psalms, but I wanted to, just on that note, I wanted to read the Book of Jubilees. I was going to do that on my broadcast, but I'm at home broadcasting now, and I'm going to read in the Book of Jubilees just to give you an idea of what the Most High was talking about, how we really have to walk in a way of righteousness before the Most High. It doesn't matter that it's not popular now. It doesn't matter. You know, they use a lot of terms to freak people out. Oh, you're homophobic. Oh, yeah, I am. Okay, if you want to call me that. What I am is I'm more afraid of the Most High than of you. I'm more afraid of the Most High telling me that I'm not going to be worthy for His kingdom. I'm more afraid of that than I am of the person that wants to do whatever before the Most High. So if you think humiliating me and calling me homophobic, if that's what you want to do, fine. I mean, it doesn't matter to me. You're not going to make me change my mind about Scripture, about Torah, and about the commandments of the Most High. In my own personal walk, I have done things that were not according to the Most High when I was younger. None of those sexual things, but just other things. Like, you know, going to school, supposed to be in class, not in class. Your grades are falling a little bit. You're telling a lie to ask your parents to try and figure out why your grades aren't up. You didn't want to go to school. I mean, school for me wasn't really a bad thing, but there was just some days I just didn't want to be there. Now, I didn't cut school. I would be on campus somewhere, but I just didn't feel like going to class. But how do you explain that when you miss a test, and then that test is counted as part of your grade? And how do you explain to your parents that you weren't there to take that test because you were sitting out somewhere hiding from your teachers and from all of the authority figures because you just didn't want to be in class? Now, I did that sometimes. I just didn't want to deal with it. But that wasn't the right thing to do. So what I'm saying is there comes a time where people have to understand, and the Most High would deal with me because I wasn't being honest with them. I was afraid of my parents. I was afraid to get chastised. So I kind of wiggled, and I don't want to tell the whole story because I knew I was going to get in trouble. And I didn't want to get in trouble. Because when you're a child, That's a horrible thing. That's the most thing that you fear is getting in trouble if you have parents that are going to correct you. Now, if you have parents that are liberal and laid back and say, oh, you're just learning, okay, then you can just do what you want. But I couldn't do what I wanted. But I didn't, that doesn't mean I was doing everything right either. But it was just the fact that I knew that there was a retribution. And so I had to try to wiggle myself out of that. And that's what I'm saying. So when everybody knows that, you know, the Most High is very strict, and I don't want to do that anymore. I want to follow the ways of the Most High. I want to keep his commandments personally for myself. I want it for my children. I know that there are blessings attached to it. I want those blessings. I want the blessing to come from the Most High, because the Most High says the blessing of the Most High, it makes you rich, and he adds no sorrow. No sorrow with it. Okay? So, again, today is Monday, April 23rd, 2012, and this is the Wisdom of Torah, sponsored by Blog Talk Radio. I'm your hostess, Eliana Batya, and this is the Psalm series, but what I'm doing is I'm going over something that I talked about on Erev Shabbat, dealing with a certain issue that I brought up on Erev Shabbat. And I just felt like I needed to readdress it today. So that's what I'm doing. If anybody is going to listen to the archives and say, oh, I thought she was teaching Psalms. She is teaching Psalms in a few minutes. But I just felt like I needed to go back over that. Okay, so what I wanted to do, I'm going to pray. And then I'm going to read to you from the book of Jubilees, because a little bit, and that's what I actually wanted to do with the Psalm series today, because I wanted to do it on the Erev Shabbat show to talk about the importance of Shabbat. It mentioned, there was a part in there that mentioned about the Shabbat, but I will also I'll read that as well, which talks about the blessing, how, you know, the Most High, what he wants to do with the people and how they're going to be blessed. Okay, and I think I'm at the section. So let me open with a word of prayer, and then I will read this, and then we'll go on into Psalm. But, you know, it'll be enough said about that one issue that I was talking about, because we all know that unrighteousness is what causes the anger of the Most High upon a people, on a nation. Israel, the nation of Israel, the Hebrew people, have been severely punished. If our story is not significant for anyone, if you cannot look at the people who are called African-American, black, niggas, jigaboos, spooks, coons, all the bywords that we've been called, all the horrible things that we've been called, we've never been called children of the Most High. We've been called by the nations all of these names, Schwarza, all of these names that we've been called. And we are the children of the Most High, but we sin severely. And our message to you, if you're not a Hebrew by descent and you're caught up in anything that's contrary to the Most High, please take our word for it as Hebrew people. If he didn't spare us, he is not going to spare you. We were his chosen people. We were his set-aside people. And he gave us his commandments and his laws. And if he didn't spare us and had us drug away in chains and dispersed over the nations, and he said we'd be called by bywords, he said that we'd be severely treated, we'd be destroyed. If he didn't spare us, he's not going to spare you. And my message to you is save yourself. Don't incur the wrath of the Most High. Save yourself. Don't live in a contrary lifestyle that you know Torah speaks against. He didn't spare us. We went through cruelty. If you go back and look at the annals of time and get any books on slavery, we were treated cruelly. We were treated so severely, and we were not regarded. People were having their feet and hands chopped off. They were fed to alligators and crocodiles and thrown into the sea and eaten by sharks. And not only that, we were just killed. Our pregnant women were ripped open, and the babies were just thrown out. I mean, we were just, you can, if you go through history and you read the stories, it'll make you weep. But you don't have to perish. Now, the Most High is not going to send a fierce nation after you, but the punishment is going to be severe. Don't go through it. That's just my simple saying for you is don't go through it. You don't have to go through that. You can repent, you can do teshuva, and you can do well, and the Most High will accept any person from the nations as well as the Hebrews that he's waking up. We are coming back to him, and he will receive us as well, and he will receive you as well. So I'm not saying this to bash people that are in the homosexual lifestyle. I'm just saying if he has not spared his own people, and his word is true, and if he says that this is a punishable thing, a punishable act, you best believe it. Just look around. The proof is in your face. Just look around at the Hebrew community around you. We're the most despised people on the planet because the Most High said we would be. And we've endured a lot of things. So the word of the Most High is very, very true. Now, he promised to restore us, and that I'm so excited because the restoration has begun and it's moving forward. But if you're in these lifestyles, it's best to get out. It's best to repent. If you can't do it yourself, you need prayer. You need help. You need deliverance. You need the Most High to really come and help you. I mean, you may believe it's okay, but you know what? If the Most High said he's going to do something like he told Adam and Hava, in the day you eat of the fruit, you shall surely die. They did not even live 1,000 years. And we know the scripture tells us that 1,000 years before the Most High is as one day. They did not last one day, and death surely did enter and did consume them. They died in the same day that they ate of that and partook of that fruit. They lived nearly 1,000, but it wasn't 1,000. So it wasn't a day. So the Most High, is, you know, he's gracious and he might be long-suffering. You may be thinking, well, you know, he's not going to do anything to me. Oh, yes, he will, but why incur the wrath? Why incur the wrath? Why incur the wrath? Why incur the wrath? That's my point. The other point I was making is, what's going on? What is going on? Why are the Europeans adopting our Hebrew children? I don't understand that. That's a question. I don't understand what the fascination and the big push to get our young children. And they're taking them, and they are taking these babies. Multiple. So, I mean, I don't understand. I believe that those children should be adopted and they should be in, you know, homes where parents love them. But I'm not understanding why the Europeans are taking all of our children and adopting them in a record numbers. So that's my question. My warning is, of course, you know, what I just stated. Hey, watch out. The Most High is serious. And for the Hebrews, for us Hebrew people, hey, we need to do our business before him because our ancestors already went through it and we are suffering. And Most High is serious. He's very serious. So let me get off of this point. I am so on this point and I need to stop, but I wanted to say it. I needed to say it. I needed to get it out. But let me move on. Let me move on to Psalms this morning and let me get this prayer going because, you know, that's a whole teaching in itself and a talk and a whole thing there. All right. Let me clear my mind. This is a good day, and I want to thank the Most High for it. Most High, I just come before you this morning, and I thank you so much. You are so awesome. You're so wonderful, and you love all of your children. You love all those who love you. And you are concerned about the entire world. We know this to be true as well. You do have a standard of righteousness and of holiness that you are calling for all to live by, especially the Hebrews. So we thank you for this opportunity. And as we look into this, as we look into Scripture, as we continue with the Psalm 7, I thank you that you would bring forth light and enlightenment in our minds, that this generation, we, all of us, myself, all those that are listening via archive, those that are listening in the chat room, all of us here today that are alive right now, we would be changed, that we would make a change, that today we would choose to do teshuva, to turn around, to walk towards you, to take hold of the Torah, to take hold of your commandments, to take hold of your precepts, and to do them, not just read them, but to do them, and to change our life and change our course, to change the destiny of our families, to change our history, to change our future. That's what you're offering us today. And I ask that we would look at it for real and that we would move forward into it. In Yehoshua's name, in his great name, in his majestic name, we thank you today. Hallelujah. Okay, what I'm going to do, I should have prayed first because that really sets the order. I kind of got on a soapbox, but prayer is really good, bringing you back. What I'm going to do, let me go ahead and read Tehillim first. Let me read through the Tehillim 7 again, and then I will do the Book of Jubilees because there's something that's relevant that I want to relate and tie in with the fact that we're doing the Tehillim so that we can understand how to apply Zedekah, or righteousness, to our life daily, every single day of our life, and every moment of the day, and every second of every moment. How do we keep the Most High within our conscience, within our conscious level, so that we are so aware of his presence that when we have the opportunity to arise where we may not react in a way that is pleasing of the Most High, or a way that still shows forth that we are the children of the Most High, we can think about it before we act and say the Most High is present. For example, if you go to England, or if you go to any country where there is a monarch, a person of royalty, by marriage or by blood, and they are the ruler of the country, not a country where there's a president that's elected in, but someone who will rule until their death. If you go to those countries, they're going to dress a certain way, and they're going to act a certain way. And when they're in public, they're going to always act that certain way. They're not going to deviate from the plan. You're not going to. It's not like our American movie stars, where on the red carpet, when they're getting their little awards or when they're going to the award ceremony, they dress as kings and queens and princesses and duchesses and dukes and ladies and lords. But then in the tabloid, you see them out there bad. You know, they're not maintaining, okay, they in movies, they have a certain look, and then they don't get a job for, you know, maybe a year or two, and then somebody snaps a picture of them on the beach, and they've gained 50 pounds, and they're getting arrested for drunken driving, or they're going to jail for this, or you find out that they jumped off in a funky lifestyle, and it's really disappointing. Or you see them getting married, and the next thing you know, they're divorced and they're sleeping around, and you know, it's crazy. So what happens is they are trying to set themselves above, but they can't maintain the lifestyle, and so they forget that they're a public figure, that they're a celebrity. And they get caught in a lot of bad ways. And with you know, we have the what's called the paparazzi. These are photographers that follow around looking for stories. They get paid a lot of money to catch celebrities in every kind of situation they can catch them in legally with their camera. And so Americans have a situation among us, that we think making a lot of money makes you a royal person, and it doesn't. Because some people, you know, they just have ghetto in them. And it doesn't matter what nationality. Some people are just low, and they may make a lot of money, they may rise to stardom, but you can take a pig out of the dirt, but you can't take the dirt out of the pig. And that's what Americans do. Now, when you go to places where there's a monarch, you're never going to see the Queen of England walking around with her behind out at a beach showing a bunch of flesh. You're never going to see that.
You're never going to see that. Only recently did we start seeing that with the Princess Diana and her sister-in-law. I forgot her name, Fergie, at the beach in a bathing suit, showing too much flesh. That was Fergie with another man on a boat. And then later, when Diana was not with Charles, she began to date the prince, you know, from the Middle East. And they caught a few pictures of her, but she was more modest. And I think there was maybe a couple pictures of her in a bathing suit, but they were more modest. But the point I'm making is that's the first time that you saw something like that among the royals. You're typically not going to see that type of a common behavior. Usually, if they do go to the beach, they do everything we do. But they're going to do it at a private setting. They're gonna let their hair down in a different way, but not in front of the public eye. And so what I'm trying to say is, as the people of the Most High, our responsibility is to always represent the Most High, represent Him in public and in private. That's our responsibility as the Hebrew nation. We're supposed to take hold of the things of the Most High and hold fast to them and do them both in public and in private. And that's what He's called us to do. So many times, and we know that Israel was caught many times with their pants down, without, you know, they were into all kind of lifestyles that were contrary against the Most High. And for that, He had to punish us as a nation. It was just bringing them down. You know, it was just bringing them down. It would be the same as if the Most High, our God, was like the Greek gods, you know, getting involved with women of the earth and having inappropriate relations. The Most High is not going to do that. The Most High is not going to ever do that. He's going to always maintain the standard, and that's something we can depend on. When we put our prayers before the Most High, He's always going to answer. We can always come with a confidence and assurance that the Most High is going to answer our prayers because He doesn't change. And He tells us He does not change. He's not fickle. We're never going to catch the paparazzi catching the Most High doing something foul or inappropriate or something that's embarrassing. We say, we can't trust the Most High. Did you see? You see them pictures of the Most High they put up on the National Enquirer? Did you see them pictures of the Most High that was in Time magazine? You're never going to catch the Most High in something like that. First of all, He's not a man that we can capture Him doing stuff, and He's righteous, His integrity. He's not going to forget to bring the sun up in the morning. You know, we have to worry about the Most High having a drunken stupor and forgetting to put the stars in the heaven at night. Everything He does is fixed. And it's continual, and we can look forward to it. We can say, tomorrow I will do this, even if we don't know if we're going to even make it in the next day. But we have so much confidence that the Most High will not fail in anything in the heavens or the earth that we can say, tomorrow or next week I'm going to go visit my mother. Next week I'm going to go see my sister. Next week I'm taking a trip to New York. Next week I'm going to go to the Bahamas. We can say that with confidence because we know that the water, we believe that the water is still going to be there. Most High didn't forget to make sure that the water in the ocean was still flowing. He didn't forget to make sure that the moon was the right distance from the earth so that we could have waves. Okay, the Most High doesn't forget those kinds of things. He doesn't forget that we have four seasons. And, okay, He's not going to put the season in place today. Oh, what happened? The Most High forgot. No, the Most High doesn't forget. So as Hebrews, when we are deciding that we're going to really return, then we have a standard of holiness and righteousness that we have to walk in. We're not going to get caught up into what the world is doing. I don't care how much they promote it. I don't care how much they sing it in song. I don't care how much they put it in magazines. They try to make it like it's mainstream. It's normal. It's not normal. The Most High has a normal for His people. And if we maintain that, the nations can have hope. If we maintain the Most High's normal and His standards, then the nations can turn and they can say we are wrong altogether if the Hebrews come in line. So that was my point. I want to go ahead and reread Tehillim 7 right now because we're only on the last part of it. But I want to go ahead and reread the whole thing. And it says, Yehuwamayah, in you I take refuge. Save me from all my pursuers and rescue me. Otherwise, they will maul me like a lion and tear me apart with no rescuer present. Yehuwamayah, if I have caused this, if there is guilt on my hands, if I have paid evil, paid back evil to him who was at peace with me, when I even spared those who opposed me without cause, then let the enemy pursue me until he overtakes me and tramples my life down in the earth. Yes, let him lay my honor in the dust. Rise up, Yahuwah, in your anger. Arouse yourself against the fury of my foes. Wake up for me. You commanded justice. May the assembly of the people surround you. May you return to rule over them from on high. Yahuwah, who dispenses judgment to the people, judge me, Yahuwah, according to my righteousness and as my integrity deserves. Let the evil of the wicked come to an end and establish the righteous, since you, righteous Yah, test hearts and minds. My shield is Yah, who saves the upright in heart. Yah is a righteous judge, a Yah whose anger is present every day. If a person will not repent, he sharpens his sword. He has bent his bow, made it ready. He has also prepared for him weapons of death, his arrows, which he made into burning shafts. Look how the wicked is pregnant with evil. He conceives trouble, gives birth to lies. He makes a pit, digs it deep, and falls into the hole he made. His mischief will return unto his own head. His violence will recoil unto his own skull. Thank you. Oh, excuse me. I always say it like that. I thank Yahuwah for his righteousness and sing praises to the name of Yahuwah Elyon. So that is Tehillim 7. Now, we were picking up at the point where it says Yahuwah is a righteous judge, a Yah whose anger is present every day. And in my notes, I noted that a righteous judge, a judge is a person who... it typically is a civil magistrate. They look over civil matters, matters that occur daily with people on just a regular, everyday basis. And the Most High is telling us, or the weed here is telling us, that the Most High judges civil matters. He judges matters that relate to everyday issues. So when people say, well, this is, you know, not a matter for the Most High, he's not concerned about this. Yes, he is. He's concerned about what happens in our daily laws and our legal system. He's concerned about how the people treat each other. He's concerned about laws that relate to fairness in business and housing. He's concerned about taxes rising. He's concerned about people who are... you know, how they deal with certain issues of everyday life. The Most High is very concerned about that. And he judges that stuff between us. Now, I teach my two granddaughters that there are two angels that are with them that are ever present. One is an angel that guards their life. The other one is one who records all of the deeds that they do. And they have to watch what they do in order to make sure that the Most High gets the best accurate picture of who they are. So this is what we have to realize as well, is that the Most High is very, very concerned about our individual lives, and he's a civil magistrate. He is concerned about what happens in the community, where we live, where we raise our children. He's very concerned about all of these things. So we have to realize that the Most High is concerned about these things. If we go into, let's see, he's a king of heaven and earth, and we have to put that in perspective. And as a king, if a king is ruling a nation, he's concerned about how the individual people are faring in his kingdom. Now, the Most High is ruling both the heavens and the earth, and he's a Yah of order. So in there was disorder that took place in the kingdom of heaven, and he got that under control. That battle that was going on, he was getting that under control. Now we're trying to get the earth under control. The Most High is trying to get the earth under control. And this is the problem that we're facing, because the earth doesn't want to come under control, because we have those who were in the heavens who were rogue, those who were in the heavens who caused a lot of trouble. They now are fighting against the Most High. They're fighting against his authority. They're fighting against his rulership. And so this is what the Most High is trying to get in order. So he's the king of the earth. And at this point, Dawid was crying out because of the battles that he was facing. Most of these battles he had caused himself, but the Most High is looking for his people to come in line. He says, if a person will not repent, he sharpens his sword. The Most High does this because he's trying to gain order on the earth. He has bent his bow, made it ready. He has also prepared for him weapons of death, his arrows, which he has made into burning shafts. He said, look, how the evil is pregnant with evil. The wicked are so ready to do evil. They conceive within themselves trouble. They come together. And it's just like what we talked a little bit earlier about the sex act. There's the different types of acts that's going on, the different ways. They get together and they consummate and they come together in their acts, and then it conceives. They conceive an evil, a trouble. And then they give birth to lies. They tell lies and they put forth lies on the people of the Most High. They put lies in the earth. And it says, he digs a pit, digs it deep, and falls into the hole he made. So it says, his mischief will return into his own head. Now, we don't typically really see that. I mean, we do see it, but we don't understand it, because when a wicked person falls, like a person, like a Rockefeller or a Rothschild or something, the way they cover it up in the media, we don't necessarily look at it as the Most High is dealing with them. When a nation is crumbling and falling, they say, oh, it's the economy, it was bad management, oh, the prime minister, we need another president, we need another leader. But we don't really realize that the Most High is doing this. It's the Most High that's doing this. He's causing them to fall. When their children are sick or ill, you know, we don't think of it as the Most High is chastising them and dealing with them. But that's what the scripture says. But we think, because they tell us, you know, it's just a natural thing. It's a normal thing. When a storm comes, oh, so it's severe weather. They don't see it as the Most High is punishing, that the Most High is the one who is actually dealing with them in his anger. But the scripture tells us he does. Everything that they are doing against his people, everything that they're doing on the earth, there is a retribution. We don't have to fear. I know it's scary. I know we get really freaked out. When we see all the murders and we see all that's going on, we freak out. We feel like we got to fight them physically. But the Most High says, no, the pit that they're digging, it's going to come back on their own head. They're going to fall in. The violence will recoil on his own skull. So here he says, I thank Yahuwah for his righteousness, because he's right in everything he does. His ways are right. All the things that the Most High is doing is right for us. It's good for us. It's good to us. And so we can rejoice. We can rejoice because the Most High is saying, I'm going to do it the right way. It's going to be all right. And it may not feel right. I'm sorry, I got a feedback here, and I'm going to turn it off. I'm sorry. Okay. I have to move out of the way because I am doing my broadcast today, and I have someone who has come up and they are talking, and my husband has not told them that can they take the conversation somewhere else. So I'm going to finish off here a little bit with my show. Just a second here. I have to move out of this quiet place. I have a lot of challenges these last couple of broadcasts with sound and quality issues. Okay, so just a second. What I'm going to do, let me play a music piece. I hate to do this to you guys because I was kind of in a flow, but let me go ahead and do that.
And I will just get this going. All right, Shalom, we're back, and it looks like we have a caller, and I'm going to find out the caller. They're calling, all of their numbers are one, so I'm not sure what kind of caller this is. It doesn't look like they have a regular number. I don't know. Maybe it could be Skype. I don't know. But anyway, I'm going to take the caller, and just one second. And if the show is, we have 10 minutes in the show. If you're listening and you want to call in, it's 646-478-3467. Go ahead and call in. And if you want to talk to me, push the number 1, and then you will come and call Q, and then I can take your call. So I'm going to go ahead and see who's on the line. Shalom,
hello.
Caller. Yes.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you. Shalom.
Oh, yeah. Hi. I was just looking at, is it Eliana?
Yes, it is.
Oh, hi. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm fantastic. Yeah, I was listening to what you were saying, and I didn't mean to interrupt your flow, but you did ask people to call in, so
I guess I don't
feel too badly about that.
Okay.
But, and I love the Psalms, don't get me wrong. But I wanted to caution you about recognizing the judgment of God upon a people, because several things that could easily be expressed. In that day, you had more of a clear demarcation of people who were absolute heathens and practiced horrible practices. You know, one of them was sacrificing children, heating the arms of Moloch red hot, and then putting their children in their arms and you know, just doing despicable things. But today, and I say this particularly in the U.S., you know, a lot of people either are Christian or have a Christian influence. And even though they do some bad things, I think we need to be careful about pronouncing judgment. And this is the reason that is the case, is because if you look at, say, the black race in America, one could easily establish from the standpoint of longevity and destitution and virtually every other socioeconomic indicator or index that one could, recognize, is that blacks do the worst. So the case could easily be made that blacks are under a curse right now.
Well, that's what we are talking about.
I'm sorry, which?
I'm sorry. Okay. I'm not sure how knowledgeable you are about being a Hebrew or even understanding about the Hebrew people. Are you knowledgeable in that area?
I'm fairly knowledgeable, yes.
Okay, so if you are knowledgeable, then you'd understand that what we're talking about and what my program is about is understanding that as Hebrew people, we have done the worst because we were a people called out by the Most High to do a lot better. And because we did not, or because our ancestors did not, this is the reason why we were taken and we were dispersed around the nations, as he said. And we still need to understand who we are as a people. We are still doing despicable things. But we're not doing the worst because most things are being done against us. We're doing things in our community, sure. But we are not promoting genocide around the world. We are not killing whole nations and ripping off their land and their natural resources. We are not demonizing leaders who care more for their people. But if they don't side with the United States or the UN, we are demonizing them in the media, then going and slaughtering them and uprooting whole regimes. The Hebrew people sinned against the Most High, and the Most High is punishing us for the sins that our ancestors committed against him. But we're in a time where the Most High wants us to rise out of this condition of slavery. So the emphasis is to the Hebrew people, that we need to make a change.
Right, right. Okay.
We need to make a change.
Right. Well, I just wanted to say also you have to recognize if you're just consolidating, you're saying black people all around the world, black people in the U.S. are Hebrew people, but at any rate, they don't have the power to do that. Now, I'm not saying they wouldn't do it, but they certainly inflict harm upon themselves. They kill each other at a higher rate than any other group, And by the way, some of these groups that, and I just heard you, I heard a snippet, but some of these groups, I think you mentioned the Rockefeller and people like this, they make the lives of the rest of us easier because they own the businesses that supply us. Now, I'm not disagreeing with what you just said. I'm just offering a little bit of, you know, insight and balance as I see it. And I think blacks or the Hebrew people, as you designate them, certainly could do a lot better and should do a lot better. But I'm just making the point with respect to identifying the curses of God and whom they are up on. Because my position would be, and I'm an observer, and I have a science background, and my position would be, if you look at the, you know, calamity and horribleness of virtually every calamity that one can mention, blacks are doing the worst. But I think you acknowledge that. So at any rate, I'll let you get back to what you were saying. I'll just hang out and listen to the rest of it. But this is the conversation that really needs to be had, and also how to improve, such as communicating the way we are, and listening, and utilizing ideas that help us grow out of the madness that we've allowed to self-inflict.
Well, I do. And what is your name?
Mr. Solution.
Okay, Mr. Solution. I appreciate your call, and I appreciate your input and your insights. And a lot of what you're saying has been and is being addressed throughout the growing Hebrew community. The Most High has set up many, many teachers, and there are some other blog talk sites that you can go to and on YouTube. I'm not sure how, you said you're an observer, so I'm not quite sure if you are just checking out the Hebrew people or you're just checking out my show, or if you have yourself felt a call and awakening to return to the Most High in a more significant way. I'm not quite sure of the level where you're at. You can actually email me on that or send a link to, and we can get back in touch together. But there are a number of Hebrew communities that have been established since the emancipation of slavery going forward to today that are trying to reach the Hebrew people with everything you said. And there are conversations. There is a group called Huanet that I'm a part of, Brother Dawid Yaakov Maccabeus, holds a discussion group every Shabbat on Blog Talk, and you can call in. But that's a think tank. That's a place where Hebrew people are coming together to find out what we can do to change. But the first thing that we have to remember and that we have to acknowledge is that who we are the Hebrew people. And we are doing a lot of things against each other in our communities and making it harder because we can't do them against the oppressor, because he has more power over us. But the Most High says in Deuteronomy 28.
Yeah, but we shouldn't do them. Yes,
we shouldn't do them. But in Deuteronomy 28 and Leviticus 26, it says we would do these things. It says we would turn on each other and kill each other.
Yeah, but we shouldn't. Is my mic open?
Yes, your mic is still open.
I couldn't discern. Yeah, I would recommend Dr. Claude Anderson. Now, I know a lot of the groups. And sometimes we get so esoteric, we get so, you know, just identify with such a little point that we really cripple ourselves. But Dr. Claude Anderson, and business is going to be the primary vehicle that any group will need to utilize in order to grow out of where it is and grow into where it needs to be. But if you look in Genesis 1, verses 26 through about 29, there's a definite connection that God makes between the family and business. You know, when it talks about you should rule over the fish of the sea, over the fowl of the air, over the cattle of the earth, all that is food. That's what we eat. And one of the points that I make in explaining to blacks pretty much what we're talking about now is that you can't feed and clothe yourself. Now, at one time, they did a much better job of it. But right now, they can't feed and clothe themselves. They have to depend on everyone else. And I think that is by and large due to their refusal to communicate and listen to each other. It's very hard to get many of the people you identifying as Hebrew people to listen. Now, some of them will be broke and completely busted, but they won't listen. They won't. And so they're going to end up just passing this legacy on to their children, a legacy of poverty, ignorance, and utter confusion. So
well, there's
I
a
just,
reason, brother, Mr. I say solutions. There's a reason for this, and it's by design. And so what's happening is that when, right after emancipation, there were black towns, there were mayors, there were stores, there were bankers. These were all completely black people, Hebrew people, very educated, had trained themselves, and had taken opportunities. But every time we started it, our own society, community, like you're saying, it was destroyed by the apartheid.
I'm very familiar with that. Rosewood in Florida. I'm also familiar with the Oklahoma Township, Black Street. I'm quite familiar with that. But see, this is the point, though, dear. I mean, wonderful lady. Is that, Eliana, is that when you fall down, regardless as to why, you can be tripped, you can slip, someone can push you, you know, you name it. The point is you get back up.
And we have, as a community, over the years, if you trace what the blacks have done over the years since the emancipation of slavery, we have gotten up continually and continually and continually, and we're still getting up. I mean, black people are doing phenomenal things right now. Right now, we are still doing phenomenal things. We're working together. We are creating industry. We are creating business. We're putting our synergistic energies together. We are doing a lot of stuff. I'm actually involved with a group in Atlanta that's doing, I mean, phenomenal things around the world. But the problem that we don't seem to want to understand and identify with, that we belong to the Most High, and we are not like other people. And I say that to say that we have a different standard and a different calling. As long as we ignore the Most High and we think that we can only imitate our oppressors and what the nations are doing, and we keep the Most High out of the equation, we're never going to reach the pinnacle of success that we desire, because we're doing it without the one who called us to be a nation.
Well,
we can't do it without him.
I agree with that, but I would say to you, and I love this sort of dialogue, I would say to you is to not be so particular that it becomes impossible. It is very easy to do the will of the Most High. He even says it. And so I don't think that's the escape route that we want to take. Our inappropriate behavior is inappropriate behavior, regardless as to who does it. And appropriate behavior is appropriate behavior, regardless as to who does it. And the thing is that, well, I don't know if I mentioned Dr. Claude Anderson, but I will. Well, I did mention him.
You did. You mentioned.
Are you familiar with his book, Powernomics?
What's the name of the book?
Powernomics.
Powernomics. I think I believe I've heard that book before, Powernomics.
I would encourage you to get a copy of that book, Dr. Anderson, and he's also on YouTube. And
okay.
Because he talks about vertically integrated, vertically structured businesses that should be owned by blacks. What blacks do is they've become total consumers. And
well, we can't generalize. Let's not generalize, like you said, because they're, like I'm telling you, they're, black people are so dynamic. It's not.
Yeah, well, I'm speaking. Well, let me say this. You know, without generalizations, there is no wisdom. And there could be people who are doing better, and I appreciate that. But for the most part, blacks don't have in any of their neighborhoods well-stocked grocery stores that they own. And
We used to have them. We used to have the corner store. We used to have the black mother-father team running the inner-city grocery store. We used to have, see what I'm saying to you, it's beautiful that we're back at this understanding. We need to do all these things, but one thing that has failed us,
yeah,
see, we've gone into the church, and the church told us that we needed to worship this white guy with this smooth blonde hair and blue eyes and effeminate look, and we need to give our love and our worship to him. This is not a deity. And we have gone into that system, and we thought that we were doing the will of the Most High by getting involved in the church. Now, I'm not saying we don't need faith and we don't need the Most High, but what I'm saying is we've been lied to. We've been given a lot of lies in our community. And so we have the black churches, and in the black churches, you have a lot of black pastors that are doing everything from opening up homes for children, disadvantaged children, to job programs. I mean, we have a lot of things going on in our cities. You go to Atlanta, Georgia, you go to different places, and you see a lot of prominent, even in Los Angeles, California. I mean, a lot of things are being done, but as a whole, our community is still not healed. Then you have the other side. You have the black Muslims that are doing a tremendous, I mean, they have bakeries, stores, businesses, clothing lines. I mean, they are doing well. And now you have the Hebrews who are coming up to understand that they belong to the Most High, and a lot of them are doing well. But as a community, as a whole, we have no united front as a whole. And so people think that, you know, we're still backwards. And then we have a tremendous amount of people caught in poverty, and they are not versed in anything scripturally or in any other way.
Right,
the problem is, this is a curse over our people, and it's not just in the United States. I'm connected with people all over the world, and it's the same. You can take a picture of the South, and you can take that picture around the world where all the Hebrew people are, no matter if they're on the islands, no matter where they are, and they're in the same condition. And
right.
We're
certainly on the same page here, because blacks around the world, and I just put it in the concise way of saying, they do not exercise economic and political autonomy anywhere in the world. And
we have reigning kings and queens, not just in Africa.
What I'm saying is, I'm agreeing with what you just said.
Right.
Usually those reigning kings and queens are dictatorial, and they rob the people blind, and there's poverty galore. Now, if that's different, you tell me where blacks are really, you know, thriving and owning.
Well, we're not. we're not thriving in the way that we see European countries thrive.
Or Japanese or Chinese.
Or Japanese or other people.
We're saying the same thing.
I understand. We are saying the same thing. But my premise is that it's not just that we need to have lateral businesses. We need to do diligence and do business with the Most High, because he's the only one that can change our captivity collectively at the same time around the globe, so that we can be released from the oppression. Our minds can be renewed. We don't even belong in all these countries where we are.
Right, but let me just add this, and I think your points are sweet. But look, there are two ways to connect with God. One can connect with God directly, or one can connect with God through their people, because they are created in the image of God. So if I just learn and want to and practice loving and treating you properly, and you reciprocate that proper treatment, loving your neighbor as you love yourself and doing unto you as I would have you do unto me, we can connect to God through that methodology also. But I do, let me just say this, I'm trembling just a little bit. I have a little bit of trepidation, because I know you keep throwing up this phrase that if we would get back to the Most High or do the Most High's bidding. I think you may have a particular slant on that that may make it very, very difficult, unless you tell me otherwise. But I think having this kind of conversation and having a willingness to listen to the other person and grow to the extent that the other person is informing me, and just our basic willingness to work together, I think the Most High is pleased with the way we treat each other. And that is actually very, very crucial. What do you think about that?
Well, I think you're right, but let me just put it like this, and you're right. I do have a bias because I'm a spiritual person, and I understand that there's a lot in the spiritual that we've discounted because of the way we've been taught. Many of us are running from spirituality altogether and throwing out the baby and the bathwater, the soap, and the tub, because we feel that that has crippled us as a people. But what I'm saying is, I have two children. I have a son and a daughter. Now, they both...
Are you married? You don't mind
yes,
my
I am. I am married. I have two children. I have three grandchildren. But I have a son and a daughter. And my son, when he was in his teens, fell out of fellowship with us. You know, he took a path that was what he wanted to do. Now, of course, we raised him spiritually. But he took another path. Now, my son is very beautiful. I mean, very handsome young man. But the path that he took, now, he went into the military. He got honors in the military. I always tried to encourage him. I said, the cream rises to the top. But he didn't. He rejected our teaching, and he rejected us as his parents in a way. When he got married to his young woman, they didn't want me to have anything to do with my grandson because I have a spiritual side, and my daughter-in-law, it doesn't have that. So she thought, well, I don't want your mom influencing our son. Okay, so that's fine. My grandson will be 6 years old on the 27th, and I have very little relationship with him. But I'm saying this to say the path that my son took, I'm his mother, okay, and he took a path. Now, my husband and I have some means financially. We support our children financially. Well, my son's getting this money, never really called me, talked to me, acknowledged me, told me he didn't want me to have anything to do with his son. But that never stopped my love for him. I would hear through the grapevine they were having trouble. I would meet the need. Still, the relationship is not proper between me and him. He's my son. He's doing well. He's graduating from a prestigious music college, and he can do anything in film, media, whatever, recording. I mean, you name it.
Is this the oldest? Is this the oldest still?
He's still the oldest. Now, he's my oldest child, but my kids are close in age. Now, my daughter, she has a closer relationship with me, and she took a path, too, but she remained closer to me. Not quite doing everything that we want her to do, but she's making her own way, but she's still closer. She brings her kids. I see my grandkids. So in some of my broadcasts, you'll hear me talk a lot about my granddaughters because they are near me. Point I'm making is this. I have two children. I love them with all my heart. There's nothing I wouldn't do for them. They can ask me whatever. The relationship is not 100% perfect. I would love to have more fellowship one-on-one time with my son. My son has chosen that he does not want to have that kind of relationship with me. He wants to have a periphery relationship with me.
Why is that? Has he communicated to you why he resents you?
I don't know, but let me get to the point, and then we can talk about that in a second. But what I'm saying is the father's heart, when I talk about the Hebrew people doing diligence with the father, it is my perception that the father would love to have a one-on-one, up close and personal relationship with each of us individually. Now, my son and my daughter communicate. They do well, just like you said. If you treat me fairly, you treat your neighbor as yourself, then we can have a semblance of relationship to the father or touch the father in that way. My son and daughter do well with each other, but it still breaks my heart that I don't have the close personal relationship with my son. Now, am I there if he has a need? Of course, like the Most High, we call unto him, he's going to answer the prayer. My son, but what I'm looking for is a relationship with him. I believe this is the same thing. I believe that our desire to be in relationship on a deeper level. Like if you met a woman, I don't know, are you married?
No.
Okay, so if you wanted to get married, you see a woman that you want to marry, and she only wants to be friends. But your heart is beating for this woman. You don't want a periphery relationship. You don't want to just be invited to a party where she's there and you can only see a glimpse or share a brief conversation. You want an intimate relationship with her. You want a lasting relationship. I believe that the Most High put that in us because that is what he desires of us. We have the same emotions and feelings that he has, and his people that he chose. Like if you chose a woman to marry her, to be more intimate with, and she cheated on you, she was with another man, it would break your heart. You might still love her. You might even understand why she did it. But it's going to break your heart because you love her. You want her. You want her to love you the way you love her. You want her to see you as the all, the ultimate, the only man. And the Most High wants us to see him as our only God. No other gods before me.
He
wants to get up close and personal.
Yeah, let me know when I can comment, because I do have, you've raised some necessary feedback. So go
okay.
ahead.
And that's what I wanted to say about when we were addressing about having several ways to have a relationship. So I used the analogy of my two children. I know that I have a son and I know I have a daughter, but I would love to have, and I have more of with my daughter, but I would love to have the relationship with my son. And that's what I'm saying. I believe the Most High is saying to his people, hey, I would love to have a more intimate relationship with you individually as a people, as a nation, and as a group. I would love to have that with you because there's so many things I want to show you and I want to do for you. And I think that's where we as a people are missing it, because we don't think of the Most High as having feelings or a desire for that type of relationship where he can really, really tell us the secrets of heaven. He can really show us scientifically. Like, for example, the Hebrew language is the closest language on the earth to Hebrew is the scientific language, the elements. When you understand the elements and H2O and all of how the periodic table works, is very much like Hebrew. So the Most High is very scientific, but he wants to have a real relationship. So that was the point I wanted to make. Go ahead.
Oh, thank you very much. And see, this is why we have met. Actually, I'm going to state it if I can't find it. But, okay, see, what you're saying, I appreciate, first of all. But there are some very important items that are missing from your statement. We can't have this type of relationship with God that we have with each other. Our relationship with God is necessarily limited. And the example that I want to give you is out of Genesis, where God says to Adam, when they have an unbroken relationship, you are alone, or he says, it's not good for man to be alone. So there's a necessary schism between God and man. Now, they had a good relationship, but what God was saying to Adam, I think in very, very clear terms, is that I can't meet your needs, your deepest needs, my being God and your being man, but I can remedy that by creating a woman for you. So the point is, you and I are talking on the phone in real time and real space. And science is my background, by the way, metaphysics and science. So I understand clearly what you're saying. But understand, every scientific term or phrase has a linguistic equivalent. And so in Genesis 2:18, it says, and God said, it is not good for the man to be alone. I will make him a helper suitable for him. And I'm not saying we shouldn't have a good relationship with God, because we should, but we need to understand at best that relationship with God is not going to be the same as it would with another person. He created other people for us to relate to. And I would encourage you to read that scripture, because it's very, very significant for God to say this.
Well, I understand that, and that's not what I was. I wasn't implying that we don't have the human aspect. But if we did have the proper relationship with the Most High, we wouldn't break his laws. The laws that he has set in place are just like the laws of nature. They have a reaction. So for, you know, if you strike a match, you're going to get fire. And what he really laid down to us was how the earth works. If you do these things, this is what you're going to experience. If you don't do these things,
let me just interrupt you here if I may. Yeah, but that's a necessary consequence of our relationship with each other. See, because it, like you, for example. Now, you may know some specific things. You're speaking generally now about about us obeying God's commandments. But if I were to talk to you and we were to get closer, and I were to say, well, what do you specifically mean? What are you talking about that I should be doing? And then I would listen and hear what you're saying. So that would mean that God would be communicating through us, and I think God loves this. He loves our talking about him, because I think it's definitely a means of praise, and it's a means of working toward exactly what you're talking about. So if you clarify to me what you mean by obeying God, and I understand that and agree with that based on my particular orientation and understanding, well, then we've made a connection.
Correct. And my understanding is that the relationship with the Most High is like a diamond. It is multifaceted.
Yes.
So that means that there is not just one way. There are many different ways. But
I understand that, but at the same time, you would tell me specifically one of those ways.
You're right, and not on this show.
I understand, but I'm just saying, in the course of our communication,
of course,
and human communication, you would delineate those to me. And
correct.
So what I'm saying is, again, and I think this is very, very crucial, God created us for each other. It is very important that we understand the God in each other, because when I really understand you, you understand that you're me and I'm you, in essence, and we operate from that love basis. Now, when we're fighting and attempting to devour one another and being abusive toward each other, well, that's a clear marker that we are out of the will of God. But again, I think it's very, very significant that God said, and a lot of people, you know, I call it the era of anachronism, getting the chronology misplaced. God said when there was no sin, and I don't know if you follow the concept of, well, I'm pretty sure you do, but God said this when there was no sin. He says, man is alone.
Correct.
I'm here with him, but he's alone.
Right,
but
right.
I'm going to remedy that by creating the woman, the helper, suitable for him. So I just think the arrow from God is pointing us to each other. And
well, that's one facet. That's one level. And you're right. In when he created man, he was a unique creation. And in his species category, he was alone.
It is what? I'm sorry?
In his species, in his category, he was
alone. Yes, indeed, yes,
okay.
Exactly. In
so
his
that's
species.
What I believe the Most High meant. But he did have a relationship with the Most High. The Most High understood that he needed to have, like you said, an additional point of reference communication that was much more intrinsic to himself, much more connected to himself, which would reflect the ultimate satisfaction and the ultimate relationship that the Most High wanted for him to have, but it did not negate the fact that the Most High was a part of the equation. And what we're missing today is making the Most High a part of the equation, and that is because we have discontinued through error from the Most High. And this is a time when the Most High is restoring. It's not to say that we don't need each other. We definitely need each other. But in order for us to have the kind of victory, I'm reminded of a battle that happened with Israel, ancient Israel, when they were fighting, I believe, against the Philistines. And they were doing they were using their valor, their strength, and they were fighting against a physical foe. But the scripture says the Most High killed more with hailstones out of heaven than Israel, the army of Israel, could kill with the sword. So the Most High was definitely fighting with them in the battle, yet they were man to man, sword to sword, shield to shield, in the field. But the Most High was a part of the equation, and Israel has taken the Most High out of the equation. And the Most High says, let me come back into the equation between the man and his wife. Let me come back into the equation in the family. Let me come back in the equation in between a person and their business. Let me come back into the equation, into the Hebrew community, into the nation, the Hebrew nation.
let me back into your equation, and I'll show you wonders that you cannot fathom, that you don't understand. His power is infinite. He doesn't want to replace the human relationship. He wants to be part of it. He wants to be a part of. And you can see that in the at the end in Revelation when we talk about the at the end when he says he's going to bring his kingdom down to the earth and be directly with men. He's always wanted to be.
Absolutely. And let me, you know, I appreciate what you're saying. And the thing that I often point out is that we are still in Genesis. Genesis and all the rest of the Bible is the unfolding, in my
yes.
humble opinion, of Genesis. And what we should be doing, first of all, like I say, I think you make a wonderful point, but if I just may lay a little bit of foundation to it, at least the way I understand
sure. yes,
it.
Yes, definitely.
In Genesis 1:26 it says, "And God said, let us make man in our image, after our likeness, and let them have dominion." That's part of what you're talking about, or at least I believe it has to be. And let them have dominion. That means sovereign reign over
uh-huh.
the fish of the sea and over the fowl of the air and over the cattle and over all the earth and over every creeping thing that creeps upon the earth. And so, so I think if we employ this will occupy us in arriving at what you are talking about. In fact, I think what we are both talking about. And
yes.
what I think happens so often, many people become so heavenly minded, they're no earthly good. And so what's being said right here is a combining of the family and business, the family and business, the family business.
Mm-hmm.
And it's talking about something that's very dear to each of us, food. We all have to eat at least once a day. And so the fish, we consume those, very healthy, omega-3, over the fowl, the birds, turkeys, whatever, ducks, and over the cattle, you know, you understand the beef and
uh-huh.
so on and so forth. And then he even goes to the grain. And he says in verse 29, "And God said, behold, I've given you every herb-bearing seed which is up on the face of the earth, and every tree," because, you know, we get a lot of food from trees, "in which is the fruit of a tree yielding seed, to you it shall be for food." And so I think, although you may be contemplating a little bit higher level, I think this is a very necessary level for all of us to strive for.
Absolutely, absolutely. But we have to arrive at that point, and that's what we're trying to do. What we're saying is, how do we get our people to come up from the level of the beast mentality, the survival of the fittest?
We talk to them.
The kill or be killed, and then bring them into a higher level of understanding of who they are, as who they've been created to be. And that's what this is what the broadcast is about. I do welcome your comments. I welcome your insight and your sharing and your wisdom. I totally welcome it on the show. It's needed. And that's what I when I started the show, I want people to call in. I want people to add to the knowledge, because this is being recorded. So after we're done, people are going to listen to this broadcast and they're going to gain wisdom for their daily life, and that's what you are bringing to the table today, and I appreciate that.
Thank you. I think Dr. Anderson's book, The Powernomics, Power, the Ability to Push Past Resistance, and Nomics is obviously economics, dealing with your daily needs and supplying those needs. So
mm-hmm.
I think connecting with the universities, the historically black colleges and universities, because they already have the information as to how to grow. The information
right.
as to how men and women need to grow and progress is already here. And of course, letting them be think tanks and advisors, and then getting your people to set up what Dr. Anderson calls a vertically structured business, where you own the business from point of origin to consumption. Or
mm-hmm.
they have said from the boat to the throat with respect to
like
the fishing industry.
Uh-huh.
So the thing is that all the information we need God has already supplied it. All we have to do is uncover it and implement it. And the way we do that is through the marvelous vehicle of language. We talk about it. We instill it in our young people because they're going to need it. One of the highest employment rates there is, I think blacks are over 25% unemployment. And I think things have changed forever because we were in a state of debt finance, and that's gone away now. And, of course, we are looking at over a 56% unemployment among black youth. And one of the reasons I have, noted that the reason unemployment is so high in the black community is because blacks don't operate off of the dual system that every other group does. They have their own businesses, and they also work in the larger general society business, and that is, basically white-owned. They work there, and they have their own businesses. For example, every community you go into, Little India, Little Korea, Little Vietnam, Little Italy, I mean, you can go on and on. Those people buy up land, and they place their businesses there, and they patronize their businesses, and their businesses serve a certain segment of their community. And although you said a few blacks are doing it, not nearly enough. And one other thing, according to Target Market News, blacks spend $750 billion, not billion, trillion, $750 billion annually, and they give that money to other groups of people who are established and who supply the needs of themselves that they can't, that is, supply the needs of blacks. So blacks need to, change their minds and transfer their money to serving themselves instead of serving all these other communities. So at any rate, I'll hang out. Is it just you and I speaking, or is there someone
right now,
else?
Yes. You're the only caller that I have. I don't know if anybody called, came over, because we're actually on overtime. Okay. So if there's anyone else that's called in, if you want to speak, you have to press the number one so that you can come in queue and I can let you in. So I don't know if anyone else...
In my humble opinion, the two areas, and this is just reasonable, if you're in a boat and you've got a leak, you've got to prioritize that leak unless you want to sink. So in my perspective, blacks should be focused on two things. They should prioritize two things, that is family and business, how to relate to each other better, connect those dots, and create businesses, because other people aren't going to respect you unless you have a certain degree of power. Like Dr. Anderson says, you are arbitrarily assigned to a skin color team, and no other team is going to play with you until you get a margin of power and respectability. You can't take any old team and play in the NBA. You've got to be recognized. And the same thing is true in the world community, as it were. Until blacks don't even value themselves, let alone other people valuing them, because when a black person looks in a black person's eyes, they know almost intuitively, you will never do anything for me, and therefore I can hate you, because that's already in the general marketplace. So the way to reverse that, again, in my humble opinion, is to start producing something so you become realistically valuable to the other person and to a degree to yourself. Because in this time-space, continuum, in this world, we do have to do things. In fact, the whole education system is based upon what you can do for the community. You know, a family loves you for who you are, but the world at large or the community, cares for you based on what you produce. And if you don't produce anything, they don't care about you. in the way we're talking about.
Right, and I and everything you're saying is great. It is wonderful. But there's another part that we have to recognize is that the Most High, we have to include the Most High in equation. And I say this because I know people who have owned software development companies that are servicing IT companies all around the world, and they are black owned, and they are that is their company, and they are supplying all of the technology, the troubleshooting, the back end support. They've created the software. I mean, I know there are so many. We are doing so many things. Some of us are operating under the radar of Edom, with a white front, because we think it's only because of we are black that we're not succeeding. But it's not just that. It is because we need to understand that there's also a very spiritual component that we're missing in this equation. So today, we lead in everything. In other words, for example, music. We set the trend for music, fashion, language, and style around the globe. Whatever we do here goes around the world. When our youth started rapping, it went around the globe, literally. I was in Israel and I saw Israelis with their pants down rapping in a schoolyard, beating on cans, and they were singing all the rap songs in English and speaking Hebrew, and I was like, this is amazing. And I was in Spain and I saw the same thing with the youth. I was in Germany and I couldn't believe it. And I said, this is amazing. We are a tremendously, we influence the nations, but we have not influenced the Most High in the way that He can set us free from the captivity. I just wanted to read Deuteronomy, a little bit of Deuteronomy 28, if you don't mind.
No, go ahead.
This is why, because what you're saying is actually, it's absolutely correct, but we're doing these things. It's not that we haven't. I've been hearing this all my life, what we should do, and I've seen people get together, and I've seen phenomenal things, but on a world scale, it's not happening, and it's not just because we're black. We think it's our color. It's not. We have people who could pass, and they're not as successful because we as a group of people have a different destiny than the nations. We're not the nations. And when we own our destiny, we will be able to change our future. So I'm going to read this really quick here. And, okay, it's Deuteronomy 28 and 48. It says, Yahuwah will send your enemy against you and everything, I'm sorry, Yahuwah will send your enemy against you, and you will serve him when you are hungry, thirsty, poorly clothed, lacking everything. He will put a yoke of iron on your neck until he destroys you. Yes, Yahuwah will bring against you a nation from far away that will swoop down on you from the end of the earth like a vulture, a nation whose language you do not understand, a nation grim in appearance, whose people neither respect the old nor pity the young. They will devour the offspring of your livestock and the produce of your soil until you have been destroyed. They will leave you without grain, wine, olive oil, or your young cattle and sheep until they have caused you to perish. They will besiege all your towns until your high fortified walls in which you trusted collapse everywhere in your land, which Yahuwah, your God, gave you. Then because of the severity of the siege and distress that your enemies are inflicting on you, you will eat the offspring of your own body, the flesh of your own sons and daughters, whom Yahuwah your God has given you. Even the most gentle and sensitive man among you will be without pity for his brother, his beloved wife, or his surviving children, to the degree that he will refuse to share with any of them the flesh of his children whom he is eating, because if he did, he would have nothing left for himself. In the severity of the siege and distress your enemies are inflicting on you, on all your towns, the most delicate and sensitive woman among you, so sensitive and delicate that she wouldn't think of touching the sole of her feet to the ground, will so begrudge her own beloved husband, son, and daughter that she will secretly eat the afterbirth that comes out of her and even her own children as she bears them. So desperately hungry will she be in the severity of the siege and distress your enemies are inflicting on you in your towns. If you will not observe and obey all the words of this Torah that are written in this book, so that you will fear this glorious and awesome name, Yahuwah your Yah, then Yahuwah will strike down you and your descendants with extraordinary plagues and severe sicknesses that go on and on. He will bring back upon you all the distresses of the Egyptians, the diseases the Egyptians had, which you were in dread of, and they will cling to you. Not only that, but Yahuwah will bring upon you all of the sickness and plagues that are not written in the book of the Torah until you are destroyed. You will be left few in number, whereas you were once as numerous as the stars in the sky, because you did not pay attention to the voice of Yahuwah, your Yah. This is the problem of our people today. We're still not paying attention to the voice of the Most High. We're creative, we're talented, we're brilliant. We are brilliant people. We're brilliant. I heard a pastor say that we were ignorant. We were not as smart as the Ashkenazi, the European Jew. That's not true. We're very intelligent. You yourself are an intelligent man, a man of science. And we have so many of our people that are extremely intelligent, creative, talented in music, in art, in science, in every aspect of life. But we cannot rise from our captivity. We cannot rise from our condition until, as a people, as individually, we return to the things the Most High has commanded us, which are written in His Torah. And so when we do that, then yes, we will excel. Yes, we will come together. And some of us are doing that, like we said before. Some of us have already understood what we need to do. We need to do 2 Chronicles 7:14. If my people who are called by my name would humble themselves, because we're not just talking about Christianity and salvation. We're talking about a nation of people who were destined to rule and be kings and queens of the earth that we're not fulfilling at this time. So we as a people have to come back to the Most High, and we as a people have to claim our destiny as such as you were talking about in Genesis. That was the original call of the Hebrew people, to rule the earth, to rule over the fish of the sea, the fowl of the air. We were supposed to do that, but we can't do that with the iniquities that are continually in our members, in our system, in our situation, in our psyche. We kept looking at what the nations were doing, and we kept following them instead of taking the other path that the Most High wanted for us. Yes, we would still be prosperous. We'd be the greatest farmers. We would be the most wealthy. We would be all of those things that we need to be. We would be controlling our own food source, and all of that comes out. But we have to do it the way the Most High says do it, or else it'll be 50 years and someone else will be having the same conversation about the Hebrew people if we do not understand what we need to do today. And we've done that.
Well, Eliana, I think my concern with what you're saying is you're very cryptic, and I would just say there are various dispensations or times in terms of how God deals with people. For example, you had at one time God was dealing with, ancient Israel through His law. And we have advanced in very important ways, transportation, communication, medicine, and those very important areas. But I think if you can, at least for a person like me, and I appreciate the compliment about intelligence, I wish you would state clearly what you mean by following God. Be very clear. If you can, because right now you're very cryptic. I think today anybody who practices known procedures, the procedures are there for everybody, the procedures of economics, medicine, I mean, you name it. And just as you said, blacks had done that and been successful before. And they were come against by racist whites. They burned down these townships and this sort of thing. And that's true. They did that, and that was wrong. This is a new day. Whites can't treat blacks like they did 50 years ago.
Oh,
now, sure, they
minute.
Can do some
Trayvon
movies.
Martin, what's happening with Trayvon Martin and all the other young blacks who
okay,
have been
but
shot
let me,
in
let me, let me say this, though. I hear what you're saying, but don't confuse an ant with an elephant, okay? Yes, they can still do, but look at what's happening to that guy. Okay, he was eventually taken to jail. I mean, the process did work when it was pushed. Now, that goes to what I was just telling you before. If you have power, you know that an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. So if blacks were more powerful, if they exercised their abilities to gain power, like in Powernomics, people would have more respect for you, and a lot of that would be prevented. So you wouldn't have to be reacting all the time, because that puts you in a state of stress, and it really weighs on your very longevity. So what I'm saying, going back to you, and I've met many people before, I've even done apologetic debates and this sort of thing, but I think our message needs to be clear, because it's going to be difficult getting it across, you know, regardless, but it needs to be clear. And I must tell you, I'm not exactly clear on what you mean by going back to the Most High and this sort of thing. And then just one final point, and I'll let you, you know, respond to what I'm saying. And just like in the day of Adam and Eve, okay, if we talk about dispensation, and I believe that that is very, very prominent in the scriptures, Adam and Eve were given one mandate, just one. Don't eat of the tree knowledge of good and evil. That was it. Everything else you do is perfect. Just don't do that. In the day of Israel, when I survey the scriptures, I see that God was asking them really to just not do one thing. Don't worship other gods.
Mm-hmm.
That was it. And they knew who those other gods were. Some of them were made like rats and disgusting things, like
mm-hmm.
boils, you know, and so on
yes.
and so forth. The Egyptians, I think, worshipped frogs, and that was the whole thing about the Egyptian expulsion, is that God used the very things that Egypt, the Egyptians were worshipping, used them as a curse. So
right.
again, what I'm saying is that to these people who were in violation of God's rules, those rules were very clear, very clear. Everybody understood them. Adam knew what the tree of knowledge of good and evil was. Eve knew what the tree of knowledge of good and evil was. And just as a sidebar, God didn't tell them not to eat from the tree of life. They could have eaten from that tree, but before they disobeyed, they couldn't disobey and then eat of it, because that presents a problem. And we see a comment on that. But the point of it is, you can't be so, cryptic that no one can understand your message. And
well,
I don't understand clearly what you mean by following God, because you haven't stated it.
Okay, and I haven't stated on purpose, because first of all, there's a very good reason. Because first of all, my goal for the program is to give practical information so that a person can take the information. You're getting the scripture. We're going through the Psalms. That's the goal of the program. I have deviated from, you know, in various segments of the program, because I am there are things that have come up that I want to address, and I'm using the time to do it. But the goal of the program is to go through all of the wisdom books, to go through the Psalms first, and to take the information in the Psalms and give a person knowledge that they can actually look at on how to apply in their daily life, how to react to situations, because the Psalms are written in such a way, a lot of it is distress and troubles that that the king went through, and then some of them are praises of things that, you know, the expectation or the relationship out of serving the Most High and things that the Most High has done.
And there's different aspects of the psalm. So my goal with this program is only to bring forth information that a person might apply in their daily walk. Now, if I go into a deeper, and I could go deeper, but what at that point, what I'm making disciples of people that I must continue to instruct and train and teach on a deeper level, and I must be responsible for your understanding and knowledge in terms of, are you going to be successful in reaching the goal to follow the Most High? My assumption that I'm making, and it may be faulty, but my assumption is that there is a basic understanding of the Most High among his people who are waking up to understand that they are Hebrews. And they have a basic understanding of what they must do in order to come back and return to the Most High. So that's why I'm not going into the actual steps of how to become a true disciple and follower of the Most High. And that
is a
question.
Do you think they would be rejected by the average person?
I don't think they would, but that, again, would be a more responsibility for myself, if you understand what I'm saying.
No, I don't. Because and I'm going to tell you why. Because if you are reading the Psalms and making them practical, then of course you are doing that. Because Psalms are obviously part of the when Jesus was resurrected, Yeshua.
That's okay. Be free. It's not a problem on my show.
I'm sorry. Say again.
You can, if you feel comfortable calling him Jesus, that's not a problem. I'm just saying, you know, just be free on with your expression.
Yeah, well, some people, you say that. Now, that tends to be the extent of their theology, is just to say that name. And
right.
I think God understands who we're speaking of, who we're speaking to, you know, regardless. But the thing is that, I often say most sermons, and this is particularly true in the black church, most sermons preached are absolutely worthless. Because
I agree. Yes.
They have no meaning, the people don't understand what's being said, and what happened, you have what they call mental masturbation. You just have a little bit of emotional appeal, but no real transmission of any useful knowledge. And usually the reason that is because the person delivering the psalm doesn't have any knowledge. They
right.
are voted in office on a popularity contest, not their knowledge content, and not their ability to deliver a real empowering message. It's all about game playing and flow showing, as it were.
Yes, exactly.
And so, you know, but my position is that if you're talking about practical things, and I think everything spiritual is practical. It wouldn't make any sense if it weren't. And I've perused the scriptures for a number of years, the Torah, actually all of the scriptures. And the thing is, there's a practicality throughout. There's a practical reason for doing everything. There's an applicable reason for doing everything. And so what happens so often in religion is it's just about facades. It's just about show. There's no substance there. Now, the thing is, and what I would say to you is, I guess you have another level of knowledge. You say you withhold that. But my position is, again, if you're teaching the Psalms and you're making them practical, you are revealing what God wants people to know.
Correct. And now it's designed
yeah.
for the individual to go and do some of their own research, okay? Now, let me just – this is great because it brings me right into the Book of Jubilees, which I have wanted to read on the show. I just have a very small part of the Book of Jubilees that I wanted to read, and this is great that we segued right into what I wanted to read. So this is a section of the Book of Jubilees, and it talks about – before this section, it talks about the woes, the messianic woes, and what was going to happen in the earth, which coincides with Daniel and with Revelation. But coming out of it, it talks about the renewed study of the law, which is the instructions that the Most High had originally given to Moshe to give to his people, the Hebrew people. And it is also available to the nations who will come after the Most High and want to follow. And very simply, it is 23, Jubilees 23, 26 through 32. And it coincides with Isaiah. I'm not sure what L is in the Latin, Roman numerals. I'm not quite sure what the L.
50.
Okay, so there will be 65, 17. So it says here, the verse says in 26, it says, and in those days, meaning this time that we're in now, the children or the descendants of Jacob, which we are the Hebrew people, and also the nations who are coming to sojourn with us, will begin to study the laws. The laws, meaning the instructions that were given to us by Moshe, and seek the commandments that the Most High gave for his people to follow, or the Ten Commandments are the ten a set of rules. There are 600, I forget, it's slipping my mind, but there's more than 10 commandments, but they're in categories of 10. And underneath that 10, each category, there are a number of commandments that we must follow. And they will begin to seek those commandments and to return to the path of righteousness, which means doing what is right in the earth. And that entails what you're talking about, taking care of the earth, making sure that we are producing the food, making sure that we are putting the right nutrients in our bodies, making sure that we are taking care of our family and our community, the family business, making sure that our relationship to the Most High is one that is born out of prayer, discussion with the Most High, making our plans before him and waiting on his approval or his correction or his suggestion to our plans. And he does that in a number of ways. He will either do it directly into our spiritual person and to our being, our psyche, or he will use other people to speak to us along the lines of whatever it is that we're inquiring of him. So this is what the Most High said they will start to do. They will start to do the things that are right. They will do righteousness, and the days will begin to grow many and increase among those children of men. So prior to this statement, it talked about people dying early. We know that since Genesis, man was living almost a day, which was almost 1,000 years, and then he lost that through disobedience and various things to the point where some people die at 40, some people die at 50. Very few people live over 100. There are people that do live to be over 100 years old, but it's not general in the population today. So the Most High is saying that once we start to seek and study his laws and to do them and to seek the commandments, understand what he commanded and why, and begin to apply and do what is right, then it would prolong our life. We would actually start to live longer. Now, science has proved that man has the potential to live longer, and they believe that man is going to start living a lot longer in the next, decade or two. People are going to start living far longer than 100 years. They're going to start to increase in longevity. And this is because people are going to start to want to know what the Most High, who created the universe, wants for us to do, and they're going to start to do it. And that's basically what I wanted to add from the Book of Jubilees, that there is a hope. There is a hope at the end of all of this, but the hope is still rooted in understanding and having that relationship. And when I say that relationship, it's the dialogue. It's the daily application of talking to the Most High, looking into his laws, meditating on his laws, trying to understand what those laws mean, getting further instruction and clarification, studying, searching it out, and applying it to our life every day, and doing what is right everywhere,